Hello and welcome to this episode of Gin and Tonic Tavern Talks. Today we're going to go over some of the different feats in the game and how you as a dungeon master can help implement them in your game or deal with them if they're becoming problematic. So we're going to start ourselves off alphabetically, against my better judgment.
Well, then why did you ask me?
Because I was making sure that my better judgment was not bad. Just because it's my better judgment doesn't mean it's good.
Okay.
So, we're going to start with the Aberrant Dragon Mark out of Eberron. You get a plus one to your con, that's nice. And you can't have any other dragon marks. You get to learn a cantrip of your choice from the sorcerer's spell list, and you get a first level spell from the sorcerer's spell list. And that spell, and cast it through your mark. Once you cast it, you must finish a short or long rest before you can cast it again through the mark. Constitution is your spellcasting modifier. Okay. When you cast a first level spell through your mark, you expend one of your hit die and roll it. If you roll an even number, you gain a number of temporary hit points equal to the number rolled. If you roll an odd number, one random creature within 30 feet of you takes force damage equal to the number rolled. If no creatures are in range, you take the damage. Okay.
Well, that doesn't sound very nice.
I don't really see how that would be a problem. Magic Initiate for the Sorcerer's spell list. You get a plus one to your con. This is actually really good. Also, you develop a random flaw from the Aberrant Dragonmark flaw table.
Hmm.
So, yeah, that ranges from horrific nightmares to your looks change slightly whenever you use the mark. You have a mood swing when you use your mark. Animals are uneasy around you. Your skin mark is burned, scaly, or withered. Your mark whispers to you. Its meaning can be unclear. And your mark is a source of physical pain.
That's cool. I mean, the drawback I see there is if you play with a party, then one of your party members is in danger of being whacked whenever you decide to use it.
When you cast the first level spell through your mark. So, I mean, it's only going to happen once per short or long rest, but it's going to happen every short or long rest that there is a 50% chance that somebody's going to take some damage.
Yep. And probably your healer, because that's how luck rolls.
And once the healer's down, you're all in trouble. But up next, we have Actor. So, I'm going to go over this mechanically and then give you my opinion.
Okay.
Your charisma goes up by plus one. You become skilled at mimicry and dramatics. You gain the following benefits. You have advantage on charisma, deception, and charisma performance checks when trying to pass yourself off as a different person. And you can mimic the speech of another person or the sounds made by other creatures. You must have heard the person speaking or heard the creature that makes the sound for at least 1 minute. A successful wisdom check or insight check against your deception check allows the listener to determine if your effect is fake. Honestly, if a player takes Actor, let them be a fucking actor. Pardon my language, but if they are taking this, this is probably one of the most underpowered feats in the game, and no one ever takes it because other than being thematically really fun, it mechanically doesn't help. So if somebody takes this, try and build in social encounters.
Yeah, give them something fun to do.
Give them an opportunity where they can infiltrate a ball dressed as the Duke and then get them into some really messy situations while inside and make them have to roleplay through it. But let them use this thing.
Yeah, it really can't hurt.
Alert. Up next is Alert, which, if you don't know about Alert, it's a fantastic feat. You get a plus five bonus to initiative, and you can't be surprised while you are conscious.
Yeah, I really like that.
Players are going to like that, and they're going to go for that. And I mean, you can add ways to make them unconscious. But another way to get around that is to simply avoid targeting them. If it's really becoming a problem, absolutely let them have the upper hand, but the rest of the party isn't going to have alert.
Yeah.
So, if you need to get around that, go with that. Artificer, you have learned some of the... You learn one cantrip from the Artificer spell list, and you learn one first level spell of your choice from that list. And intelligence is your spellcasting modifier. You can cast this feat's first level spell without a spell slot, and you get that back on a long rest. You can also cast the spell using any spell slots you have. That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
You can use it with one type of artisan tools of your choice. You can use it as a spellcasting focus, intelligence as its anything that uses spellcasting as spellcasting ability. Okay. So again, this is magic initiate, but more focused. You get one first level spell. The player gets one first level spell, one cantrip. They can fire it once a day without the first level spell once a day without a spell slot, and then they can just cast it again. Honestly, let the player have some fun with this. Unless they pick a spell that is actively going to screw over your game, but how are they doing that with a first level spell? And artisan's tools don't get enough love, so if they pick an artisan's tool and find a creative way to use them, just let it happen.
Oh, I was actually going to bring that up, that artisan tools aren't used enough in a game.
Did you? If you are proficient with cobbler's tools, you can create a hollow space in each of your shoes to store things in.
I have heard that, which makes me want to know what proficiency with all the other tools can do for a person or a character.
You know what? That's going to be another episode. We'll go over that in some more detail.
Yes, please.
There is a section in Xanathar's that I would like to get a little more familiar with as well.
Awesome.
Maybe we can help our listeners and save them having to read a book.
Yeah. Don't read a book. Listen to us talk. We'll get around to it eventually.
Athlete. Increase your strength or dex by 1 to a maximum of 20. Only takes you 5 feet to get up from prone. Climbing doesn't cost you extra movement. And you can make a running long jump or a running high jump after moving only 5 feet on foot instead of 10.
So basically you did not skip leg day.
You did not skip leg day at all. I would, as a GM, I would try and throw in areas that had more climbing. Make that extra climbing movement and that jumping matter.
Yeah.
You know, a chase through the trees where this player gets to shine because they happen to take athlete. And then if they fall down, they only take 5 feet of movement to get back up after taking, you know, like 2d6 fall damage. I'll roll a 1.
Yeah.
Bountiful luck. I have issues with anything that says luck in it, but...
Okay, but I'm not familiar with bountiful luck. What does that one do?
Well, you gotta be a halfling to take it. Your people have extraordinary luck, which you have learned to mystically lend to your companions when you see them falter. Not sure how you do it. When an ally you can see within 30 feet of you rolls a 1 on a d20 for an attack roll, an ability check, or a saving throw, you can use your reaction to let the ally re-roll the die. The ally must use the new roll. When you use this ability, you can't use your lucky racial trait before the end of your next turn.
Okay. So instead of taking the luck for yourself, you're letting it go to someone else. Because someone asked them a question and they went, dub, 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 dub.
Yep.
I'm on the fence. So you throw a rock at them and tell them, focus!
Yeah. I'm on the fence about this one because it has all of the challenges of Lucky. But at the same time, you have to give up your ability to use it. So in the hands of the right player, this could be a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. And you could really put this in around your party. In a party that's trying to break the Lucky and Bountiful Luck combos, you could have a really bad time with anybody rolling ones.
Yeah. Definitely.
Shard.
When I played a halfling in our first game, like, rolling a one held no fear over me because I was lucky. I could just reroll it.
Yeah.
And I mean, every now and then I'd see the one and I'd go, oh shit. Oh wait. You know? But there was no fear. Realistically, the lowest I could roll was a two, which, I mean, is still pretty shitty in most cases, but it's not that critical failure.
Yeah. And I do believe games should run with critical failure and critical success, because every situation can go absolutely swimmingly or absolutely caca.
Absolutely.
I try to change the baby. You try to throw the dirty diaper into the garbage, but instead it hits the ceiling and then falls on your head.
Yeah.
Nat 1, changing a child.
Yep.
Actually, no, that'd be the 2. Nat 1 would be throwing the child. We do not condone child violence on this channel. That was a joke for those of you who are a little bent out of shape.
Yes.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Before the internet cancels me, back to our list. Charger. When you use your action to dash, you can use a bonus action to make one melee weapon attack or to shove a creature. If you move at least 10 feet in a straight line immediately before taking this bonus action, you either gain a +5 bonus to the attack's damage roll, or push the target up to 10 feet away from you.
Oh, so you can just, like, bum rush everyone.
Yeah. It does specify you have to use your action, so this could be... This is not something I'd recommend the rogue try and do.
No, because they... Yeah. Yeah. That could get dicey.
That could get dicey, but it also could make this feat, if used correctly, could really make a rogue feel like their ability to dash as a bonus action is useless, because somebody is able to dash as an action and still make an attack with their bonus action. Neat way to go at that ability. As a GM, I would give your players fights with cliffs.
Yes, because anyone who has ever played Skyrim knows that shouting people off or things off of a cliff is really fun. And in this case, you could just shove them off a cliff.
Yep. Give them a space where they can... They've only got to move 10 feet in a straight line to be able to push somebody another 10 feet if they... What is that? If you move 10 feet in a straight line immediately before taking this bonus action, you gain a +5 to the damage roll. Or push the target if you choose to shove and you succeed. So you do have to succeed on the shove.
Yeah, you could fail the shove and you could fall yourself. There's where you roll a natural one on that shove, and you're going over the cliff instead.
Yep.
Bye.
But that's a risk you take with an ability like that.
Yeah.
Chef. Oh, chef. You increase your constitution or wisdom score by 1. So I'm assuming that's because... Wisdom, you've gotten better at cooking, or constitution, because you're just a bad cook.
And you can stomach it.
Yep. You spent time mastering the culinary arts, and you gain the following benefits. Proficiency with cook's utensils if you don't already have it. As part of a short rest, you can cook special food, provided you have the ingredients and the cook's utensils on hand. You prepare enough food for a number of creatures equal to 4 plus your proficiency bonus.
Okay.
So, I mean, if you play Variant Human or use Tasha's Legacy, that's 6 at level 1.
Yeah. That's a lot.
That is a lot. Because, is it level 4 or level 5 your proficiency goes up to 3?
Beats me.
You know what, I can't remember and I don't have it on hand. Either way, that's starting you out with 6 people you can feed. That's most D&D parties. And at the end of the short rest, any creature who eats the food and spends 1 or more hit dice to regain hit points regains an extra 1d8 hit points.
That's very, very cool.
That is very, very cool. We're going to get back to that because I have a really cool combo that could go with that. And then with 1 hour of work, when you finish a long rest, you can cook a number of treats equal to your proficiency bonus.
I thought you were going to say cook a number of creatures. I was going to lose it, honestly.
You cook a number of... What, you just... Let me go to the orphanage and pick up a few treats. Cooking these creatures.
Again, straight to the children.
Hey, I go for the shock value, okay? Fair and enough. If you're playing a lizard folk, that is entirely possible. Because lizard folk see things as food and not food. Friend is not food until friend is dead.
And then friend is food.
Yes.
I now want to play a lizard folk that runs around with like a little handmade contract to all of his friends that gives him permission to eat them when they're dead. You're my friend, yep. So I don't really want to eat you just without your permission. Can you please sign this so that I have permission to eat you when you're dead? I think you taste good.
A really polite lizard folk. I could see that.
Yep.
Any creature that was violent towards you, that's just implied consent.
Yep.
Anyways, so you make treats equal to your proficiency bonus. They last for 8 hours. A creature can use a bonus action to eat one of the treats and gain temporary hit points equal to your proficiency bonus. Honestly, if somebody wants to take this, this sounds like a lot of fun. This sounds like your party didn't have a dedicated healer, or you've got somebody who's just really into playing up this background idea of being a cook.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to play that up as a roleplay thing, that is fantastic. And if they're doing it as a way to get some more healing in the party without multi-classing, then that's also fantastic. I mean, if they're trying to get more healing, I don't know why they're not taking the healer feat, but you know what? We'll get to that later, further down the list.
Yeah, it's coming.
But, hear me out on this one. You take a short rest, you expend a hit die, the chef cooks a meal. Then the bard plays the song of rest.
Yep.
Eric gains 1d8 plus 1d6 plus your hit dice worth of hit points out of that short rest. Now that's how you recover from a bad situation.
Oh yeah.
Crossbow expert. You ignore the loading quality of crossbows with which you are proficient, so somehow you can load them with your teeth. Fine. Being within 5 feet of a hostile creature doesn't impose disadvantage on your ranged attack rolls.
Oh.
So now you can shoot them in the soft part of the neck and send an arrow straight through their brain. When you use the attack action and attack with a one-handed weapon, you can use a bonus action to attack with a hand crossbow you are holding. All right, so somebody's taking this. I've had a player take this, and it is purely so that they can be a swashbuckling bastard. And it's fantastic, and you should let them do it. It is the last piece that they are really looking for. Because now you can have a one-handed melee weapon, and... as a bonus action, and be able to fire your hand crossbow, because you can ignore the loading quality of crossbows with which you are proficient. I do believe that you need to be have somewhat of a free hand, so still, do you with loading? I'm going to have to look up loading.
Yeah, I'm no help. I've never used a crossbow.
Either way, it's a fantastic feat. Let them be swashbuckling. Even if the rules say you have to have a free hand, they took this feat so that they could do this. Let them be able to load it with a short sword in their hand or something, because they want to wander on in firing crossbows and swinging swords.
Mm-hmm. Which is really cool.
If you have firearms in your game, allow this to work as well, because they're, again, trying to wander on in with a cutlass and a flintlock and live out that fantasy.
Yeah.
Crusher! I personally have enjoyed this one. I thought it was quite useful. Increase your strength or constitution by 1 to a maximum of 20. Once per turn, when you hit a creature with an attack that deals bludgeoning damage, you can move it 5 feet to an unoccupied space, provided the creature is no more than one size larger than you. And when you score a critical hit that deals bludgeoning damage to a creature, attack rolls against that creature are made with advantage until you start your next turn. This is a phenomenal weapon, but you have to be using a bludgeoning weapon.
Yeah, but your fists work for that, right?
Yeah, actually they would. Or any staff, club, mace, Morningstar, maul. Anything that doesn't pierce or slash deals with this. And that moving 5 feet to an unoccupied space that you choose has no save. You just hit them, deal damage, and then tell them, guess what? You're moving 5 feet that way, whether they wanted to or not. And then...
And hopefully you've got an ally that's right next to you so they can take an attack of opportunity because they move.
Yep. And if you score a critical hit, all other attacks against him until the start of your next turn have advantage. So that's when the party surround and pound that particular person. Get them off the field. So...
That is crazy cool.
As a GM, I don't think you really need to do anything with this one. It's a fantastic feat that makes that player have a few more abilities. If you're struggling with them knocking your bad guys off of the bridges you put them on, stop biting on bridges.
Or make bigger enemies.
Yeah, actually, that would be... If there were... I mean, you would have to make them size huge. So maybe this is a time to break out a giant arc in your game.
Yeah. Then things get interesting.
Yeah. I personally instead think it's much easier to just throw out several enemies at them. Divide their attention. Because then you can smack one guy around, absolutely, but there are other people on the field.
Yeah. And someone's going to get in the way eventually.
Sorry, my phone decided to throw an ad at me.
Oh, that's okay.
Defensive Duelist. You need to have a dexterity of 13 to take this one. When you wield a finesse weapon that you are proficient with, and another creature hits you with a melee attack, you can use a reaction to add your proficiency bonus to your AC for that attack, causing it to miss you. Potentially causing it to miss you.
Yeah. That's cool, though.
And there's no limit on that. So, you've got a player who's got a finesse weapon, which is already a limited list. And as long as they can... And another creature hits them with a melee attack, they can add their proficiency to their armor. That's really not that powerful, but will make them feel powerful. I would actually... try and tune some of your bad guys so that that addition will make them feel the difference. Like, even if you take this at level 1, that's plus 2 to your AC. So try and tune your bad guy's bonus that you're choosing so that they're going to hit just above that number. On average, say they have a 13 AC, you want your bad guys to be swinging at a 13 to 16 on average, so that when they get to use that ability, it's going to feel like it's going to change the outcome. And sometimes they're still going to get hit, because, you know what, luck can be shitty sometimes. Sorry, man.
Yep.
Moving on. Dragon Fear. Prerequisite, you have to be a Dragonborn. You increase your strength, constitution, or charisma by 1 to a max of 20. And instead of exhaling destructive energy, you can use your breath weapon to roar, forcing each creature of your choice within 30 feet of you to make a wisdom save. A target automatically succeeds if they can't hear or see you. Why does seeing you matter? On a failed save, a target becomes frightened of you for 1 minute. If a frightened target takes any damage, it can repeat the saving throw, ending the effect on itself on a success. So you don't gain any more breath weapon attacks, but you can potentially make a bunch of creatures run away from you for up to a minute, because if they're afraid, they're going to use their movement to get away as far away from you as possible.
Mm-hmm. A minute is pretty good,
because if you don't deal damage to them, they stay afraid of you for that whole minute. That's actually pretty powerful.
Yeah.
I don't really understand why they have to see you. I don't know. If I heard a dragon roar behind me in a world where dragons were real, do I need to see the dragon to be afraid? No, I've already pissed my pants.
Yep. I've already started running, my shadows just catching up.
Yeah, pretty much. And I'm hoping that there's something more juicy than me running away.
Yeah.
As a GM, if a player had this and think they want to take this, so their DC is 8 plus proficiency plus their charisma. Yes, charisma. Throw a bunch of minions at them. Throw a bunch of low-level bad guys that the party goes, oh my god, there's 20 bad guys charging down the hallway at us. And then your dragonborn gets to step forward and just roar. And they all run away. And the party, for at least a moment, gets to go, yay, that was great! Except that they all ran and got reinforcements, so now you get to pull a bait and switch on them.
Yep.
Dragon Hide. You also have to be a Dragonborn. Increase your strength, con, or charisma by 1. Your scales and claws are closer to that of your draconic ancestors. While you aren't wearing armor, you calculate your AC as 13 plus your dexterity modifier. You can use a shield and still gain this benefit.
Ooh.
Damn!
Okay. I'll be a shield-carrying naked dragonborn.
We're going to revisit this one. We're going to revisit that in just a second. There's a second part. You grow retractable claws from the tips of your fingers. Extending or retracting requires no action. The claws are natural weapons. If you hit with them, you deal slashing equal to 1d4 plus your strength modifier. Oh, instead it sucks. Okay, well.
Aww.
I mean, instead of normal bludgeoning damage, which if you aren't proficient with unarmed combat is only 1 plus your strength. So, it is an upgrade.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I want to go 13 plus your dexterity modifier. So, the barbarian in the party, the human barbarian, is 10 plus their dex plus their con. Yes. And the monk in the party is 10 plus dex plus wisdom. This is 13 plus dex. Like, that's really powerful. That's going to change up a lot of things in your fights.
Mm-hmm.
Because out the gate, assuming that you have Like that's a minimum 15 armor if you're taking this. You know what? I would just let it roll. It's got to be a dragonborn, so... And I am all for the racial prerequisites on certain feats. I sometimes like to let players take one of those at level one and get rid of variant human. I've gotten rid of variant human for a long time.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I've had a couple campaigns where I just don't offer it as an option and let all the players take a feat at level one. Does it up the power curve? Oh, yeah. I'm also notoriously bad for dropping really ridiculous magic items.
I mean, it's great.
I've been fairly reserved in the Ship for Brains campaign thus far. Except when I let you guys go shopping in the most magical city, because we started there.
Yeah, but that was fun.
That was fun. They bought a boat.
We needed one.
That is very true. I think that's probably enough for our first episode, so tune in next time when we continue down our list of different feats and how you can adapt your game to work with them, and why your players obviously want to take them.
Because it's fun! Bye!